You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
New York is the city that never sleeps, and neither does Sal Licata. From Flushing in the Bronx to the Meadowlands in MSG, Sal sounds off on the biggest sports news of the day. Welcome to WFAN Daily with Sal Licata.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan
Welcome
Roberts.
Everybody to the first ever. This is the first of its kind on WFAN and Odyssey. It's a joint podcast. It's like a marriage. It's like a night of sex between Rico Bronya and WFAN Daily. I'm Evan Roberts. That's Sal Licata. You can download WFAN Daily. You do it every day, right, Sal? That's why it's daily?
Absolutely. I mean, I should do it every day. Sometimes, you know, I take a day off or, you know, take a little breather here. But yes, WFAN Daily. And what is with you and the sex? Sex is one thing. Can you keep that separate from the sports?
You got to understand something. My wife's out of town. I'm very lonely right now, so.
Well, I mean, geez, what are you trying to take it to a Pete Alonso bobblehead or something? I mean, what's going on over there?
No, it would be a Jacob deGrom bobblehead. Yeah. What are you talking about? I kid. Well, today we're going to do a Mets preview because we are on the precipice of the New York Mets season beginning. But first, before we get into details and kind of make predictions on over-unders for Met players and Met performances, something we actually did a year ago, and I think we were wrong on just about everything because the Mets completely sucked and it was a disastrous season. I have felt for really the last month and a half that despite an offseason that was disappointing until the signing of J.D. Martinez, I felt good about this team. I felt good about them surprising a lot of people for various reasons. For you, and obviously the JD signing kind of changes things for a lot of people, where have you felt and how have you felt about not just the offseason, but the expectations on what this team could accomplish in 2024?
You're talking about after or before JD?
Before and then after, because I love seeing how that's changed.
Yeah, and I'm shocked at myself even at how much just one player who I really didn't even want. Like, my first choice was Jorge Soler, and I'm surprised how that one move has made me feel differently. Here's how I feel about this team. Pre-JD Martinez, I didn't love the lineup at all. When you had, to me, three automatic outs with Vientos, Beatty, and Bader, and you're asking McNeil to be a more integral part, Marte to be a more integral part, I didn't love the lineup, and I don't love the starting rotation. So I was down on them thinking that, yeah, best case scenario, they could compete for a wild card spot. But reality, I didn't think they were going to be a wild card team. Post JD Martinez, everything changes. The pitching remains the same, obviously, but the lineup is so much better. Not only because you replace the weakest link in that lineup in Vientos with a proven major leaguer, but because of what it does to lengthen the lineup out. Now you don't need to rely on Starling Marte as much. Now you don't need Jeff McNeil to be the four-hitter or five-hitter. You move him down. Now Alvarez is a luxury at five or six, wherever they have him in that lineup. So, and you could, I could even live with Brett Beatty. Like, I could live with one guy being a defense-first guy in Harrison Bader and one guy being a guy that's going to try to see if he can be a major leaguer in Brett Beatty. I just can't live with multiple. So when you look around the diamond now, you look around that lineup, the Mets have a majority of proven major leaguers in that lineup. And I think it changes everything to where I think they're now a legitimate playoff contender.
Really? So it changes that much for you. So you thought, what, high 70s, low 80s. Now you think 85, 86 wins?
Yes, I do. I would expect this team, before Martinez, I was saying under 500. After Martinez, they should be minimum 500, meaning that if they make the right additions at the trade deadline, they should be an 85, 80, maybe 86 win team, something like that.
The formula to me, because the pitching is not, you know, even in the best case scenario, the pitching is not going to be the strength of this team. Like that, I can't see a scenario where, you know, Sean Manaea and Quintana and Severino and Hauser and McGill are all kind of hitting their better career numbers. And McGill, he doesn't really have great career numbers. It'd have to be just a breakthrough season. So I always thought the formula for this team to be successful is they got to score a lot of runs. They have to score a good amount of runs, have average starting pitching, and have a really good bullpen. And that's the kind of formula that could get you to 85, 86 wins, which nowadays, that's a playoff spot. You win 85, 86 games.
But you're also leaving out the most important part, and it's something that has driven me nuts about this team for years. Defense. Harrison Bader, now I know he's got to stay healthy and I don't think he will because he never does, but let's just pretend for a second that he's going to for the majority of the season. He makes them more legitimate because now you upgrade two positions, you move Nimmo to a corner spot, and you upgrade center field. The defense is better. Lindor, a defensive stud, you know, third base, whatever, first base, whatever. But up the middle with McNeil and Lindor, they should be good. Alvarez throwing out runners. Marte back. Their defense, Ev, I also think is going to be cleaned up to where that should help them win some ball games. So pitching looks thin, yes, but they should be able to catch the ball, throw the ball, play the game the right way, which should lead to more wins than last year.
And the big defensive upgrade, besides what you said, which is right, obviously Harrison Bader is ridiculously good defensively. He's a platinum glove caliber player defensively. You move Nimmo to left field, which is probably going to be a strength. It's Starling Marte. Because yep. In year one, Starling Marte played like a gold glover. In year two, he was a butcher in right field. And obviously, I'm sure the double groin injury had a lot to do with it. But if Marte is more like the 2022 Marte, I'm not even talking with the stick, but defensively, that improves another spot in the outfield by just having him be healthy because he was not the same guy a year ago.
Now the problem is, you know, can you rely on him to be healthy? So it's a big question mark. But if we assume health for the sake of conversation, then yeah, I think defensively they're pretty good. If I were going to be weak in any area defensively, it'd be at the corners, first and third base, and that's their weakest spots. Even Alvarez behind the dish, you know the pitchers like throwing to him, going back to Max Scherzer, and you've seen his arm throwing out guys left and right in spring training. So I think the Mets up the middle for the first time in a very long time are a good defensive ball club.
Here's what I don't understand, and you've said this a lot, so I disagree with you. Why do you, and the analytics, because I think they back you up for the most part, so I'm arguing you and numbers, and I acknowledge that. I don't get how Pete Alonso is referred to as like a below-average defensive first baseman. I don't see it. I watch the guy every day. He gets better every single year. I think he's become an average to slightly above average defensive first baseman. I don't see how he's a butcher over there.
I didn't say he was a butcher, but...
He's a weakness defensively. Didn't you not just say that?
But he is. Go around the diamond. Go around the diamond. Tell me where the weak links.
No. I'm not saying he is on the caliber of Lindor. I'm certainly not saying that. I mean, it's almost viewed as if defensively he's not... He's like a liability. And I just don't – now, maybe he was 3 years ago. I think every single year, Pete's gotten better and better defensively at first base to the point where I think he's okay. I think he's good defensively at first base.
I agree. He's worked hard there. He's improved significantly. I didn't say a weak link as far as when you compare him to other teams or anything like that. I'm talking about on this particular team, the weakest defensive positions where I look at it are first base and third base. Even though, and Beatty worse than Pete probably, even though Pete has gotten better, he's still not a good defensive first baseman. You could tell the difference between a Dom Smith, just to throw you out one in recent years, and Pete Alonso. He's not smooth around the bag. He's a little awkward. He's worked hard. He's improved. I don't think he's a quote-unquote net negative, but he's also not a good defensive first baseman.
By the way, I love Pete Alonso. I say this with love. He's kind of clunky no matter what he does. I mean,
that's the point. And at first base, you want somebody smooth around the bag, smooth with the hands. Pete is not that. He's been great. He's been much better than they ever said. They said he couldn't make it in the big leagues because defense was so bad.
I've heard the Mets say so much wrong things about young players, and usually we always think it's, oh, Fernando Martinez is going to be a star, crap like that. It's actually the opposite. Francisco Alvarez, not a good defensive catcher. Yeah, right. I mean, what the hell are you talking about? Like, the guy comes up, he's great defensively. He's one of the best pitch framers in baseball. Pitchers love throwing to him. It's like, where did that come from that he's not going to be good defensively? So even the same stuff about Pete Alonso, like, over the years, I've wondered that about the Mets. Like, they tell us stuff, and it turns out to be so not true.
And it is different regimes, too. Like, you can't just blame it all on Sandy Alderson. And remember, I forget the exact year. Was it 2017, 18, whatever it was, where we were begging for them to do something and bring up Alonzo McNeil.
Yeah.
They held him down, not ready or whatever. Then they finally, or McNeil specifically, they bring him up, and the guy rakes when he first came up. We're like, yeah, we told you so. And they were saying that he couldn't hit big league pitching. Like,
yes. It was McNeil they called up. They kept Pete Alonso down. Then there was a whole controversy going into 19. Should they keep Pete Alonso down to get an extra year of control? Now, as we sit here today, damn you, Brody Van Wagenen, you son of a bitch. You should have kept him down for a few weeks. Then we wouldn't have had to worry about this contract stuff with Pete Alonso.
You wouldn't trade that year, though. This is a great, great conversation, because now we're years later and we're at the point where, okay, yeah, that year cost, you know, the Mets a year of control. But rookie of the year, record-breaking home run. Like, you wouldn't trade that season for this. Let them deal with it. They'll figure it out. They're big boys.
I wouldn't trade it at all. I think what bothers me, and this bothered me, not about the recent DeGrom thing and the earlier DeGrom thing. It was one of the many times me and Mike got into an argument. And this time I won. I actually won the argument with Mike, which was right after Jake won the Cy Young in 2018. I'm screaming and yelling on the radio, they got to extend him. And Mike said, you know, kid, you're an idiot. I mean, why would you extend the guy off a career season? And I understood what he was saying. And I said, because I feel like if you let this go even further, he's going to get to free agency. And with the Wilpons owning the team, obviously very different, you will lose him. And believe it or not, within 6 weeks, they got him to the extension. They actually pulled it off after he won the Cy Young. And it luckily bought out a couple of years, and obviously left as a free agent, different story. So my big argument on the Pete thing would have been 2 years ago, I would have extended him. That's what I would have done differently. It's not about holding him back down a year, and it's not even now. Like, I would have liked them to engage in more discussions to extend them now, but I've also kind of found out that it's Scott Boras asking for an insane amount of money, and I understand that. So it's more a year ago when Scott wasn't the agent. Why not be more aggressive in trying to get a deal done? And by the way, I'm going to first guess this. Take care of Francisco Alvarez right now. Don't F around. We just saw the Dodgers do it with Will Smith. I want to see my teams do more of that.
Right, but don't you think the Mets are in a position of power to not have to do that? Because they could let the market be what it is, and if they value the player at that – like, Pete's not going anywhere unless he gets a ridiculous offer that the Mets are like, well, you know what? We don't think he's worth that, just like they did with DeGrom, and they let him go. But if it's – why set the market before you have to, and why overpay for somebody and take that risk before you have to when you have the most money in the game like Steve Cohen does?
Because I don't think – if now, this year, you're right, okay? This year, it would have been more of like my
– too late, yeah.
It's too late. Like, I would have been aggressive doing it now, but if Scott Boras isn't willing to listen, it's not going anywhere. Like, I would try to get a deal done now, but if he's going to insist on $400 million, well, okay, go to free agency. But the reason why I think it makes sense 2 years ago is you're going to get him on a better deal. Like, you are. You're going to save money in the long run, which you can then use for another free agent you may be targeting. Right. That's why I think it makes sense to do it a year or two removed from free agency.
All right, but let's just say Alvarez. Alvarez has a monster year this year, right?
Yeah.
They're going to look to lock him up. But they don't have to for how many more years of control? So you could go get a free agent like Juan Soto in the offseason and worry about Alvarez down the road.
Yeah, but okay. Yes, but then down the road, what are you saying? You know what I mean? Because down the road is right now for Pete Alonso. If they had signed him 3 years ago making $21 million a year – it would be a completely different conversation. See what I'm saying?
But with Cohen, I'm not worried about it. With the Wilpons, yes, different story. With Cohen, it's not about the player, or it's not about him being able to afford the player. It's about where they value the player.
Okay.
With prior ownership, it was about they didn't have the money.
Yeah, the Wilpons are a different animal. Steve Cohen's a million times better. That's not even an argument. But there's a budget, right? Like, ask yourself this question. Why did the Mets not sign Jordan Montgomery to a one-year $25 million?
Because of luxury tax threshold.
Right. And by the way, I'm not saying they should have. $53 million for Jordan Montgomery kind of feels insane. But it's a reminder that there's a budget. They're not going to spend that kind of money on 1 year for one guy. Just like Yamamoto. They had a number they were never going to go above.
Which, by the way, it means that there is a salary cap now in baseball. It may be an extreme one, but it is a salary cap, because even us, irrational, diehard, passionate fans, whether it's Mets or Yankees, doesn't matter, even we can understand, like, you know what? I could understand why they wouldn't go to that extent, because it's ridiculous that you have to pay double for this guy for 1 year.
But here's the problem with that, and this is why it's important to talk about. I think we're in a position where, unless the Mets win 95 games this year, and even then I don't think it changes, we're going to have to overpay to get certain players to come here. Like, and I remember talking about this during the whole Yamamoto debate you guys were having on the midday show. We were talking about, and I remember saying to Tiki, if they want to sign him, and this was pure guess, like I didn't have any insight on it, just a pure guess. It turned out to be true, though. They're going to have to pay him $400 million. And I remember Tiki saying, how could you pay a guy you've never seen pay $400 million? And I said, if you'll want him, that's what it's going to take, because we're not going to get him to not pick the Dodgers or the Yankees if we're close. We're going to have to beat it by a lot. And I think Juan Soto is the same way. I think, I don't want to say Corbin Burns. It's a little bit different because he's kind of like, I don't know, but maybe Corbin Burns. Like, you're going to have to overpay guys considerably to get them to come here. And that's just the reality. Why? That Steve Cohen, because they're not going to come here. Why didn't Yamamoto come here?
Yeah, well, I think it was different with him. Otani, Yamamoto, they didn't want the East Coast. They didn't want New York.
They want, well, hold on. Yamamoto was willing to go to the Yankees. Like, reportedly, it was Dodgers or Yankees. So he was willing to go there.
I'm not buying it. I'm calling bullshit on that. I'm not buying it.
You think he was going to the Dodgers no matter what?
Yeah, I do.
You think if the Mets offered $400 million, he was saying, I'm going to the Dodgers?
But again, why are you – I don't know that, and I think he would have taken the Dodgers anyway. I don't think he wanted to go anywhere but the Dodgers. Why are you saying that Soto or others are going to be like Yamamoto?
I don't know for sure. I think every free agent is different. I think that you're going to have to overpay to get people to come to a franchise that doesn't have the same kind of pedigree of winning that the Dodgers do, that the Braves do.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's just play out Soto for 1 second. Yeah. We don't need to belabor this. We've done this. But if the Mets offer Soto $600 million and the Yankees offer him $540 million, you don't think that's going to be enough to get him?
No, but that's a lot. That's my point.
Well, how about the Mets offer $550 million and the Yankees offer $500 million? Is that not going to be enough to get him?
No, I think the figures you're describing are that significantly more offer I'm talking about.
But it's also more money. So what about $530 million compared to $500 million? What about $520 million compared to $500 million? Like, more to me, Soto's taking the most money.
And yeah, I agree with you, but I think what the Mets did with Yamamoto is they allowed – their offer was the most, right? We all agree the Mets made the biggest offer.
Well, you and I agree. BT and some others may not. But, yes, I agree they made him the highest offer.
No. They made the biggest offer, but the problem is they made an offer that was big but not significant enough, higher than L.A., for them to say, yeah, we're out. Like, Texas outbid us for DeGrom. And even if DeGrom went back to the Mets and said, and I know he didn't, but if he did and said, hey, this is what Texas offered me, the Mets would have been like, all right, well, good luck in Texas.
Right.
Because their offer was so significantly higher than us. So my point is, let's say, and Soto's the example, but there's a lot of really good free agents next year. And I hate thinking about it, but all right, for the sake of this, if we offer $620 million, and the Yankees offered $610 million, and Soto was like, you know, I kind of liked it in the Bronx. Let me give them a chance to match. They're going to match that.
All right,
that's
but
why
it's also,
you have it, to beat them significantly to steal the player.
But it's also a different circumstance. Now, you just don't know the individual. Soto happens to be a Yankee now. They made the aggressive move in trading for him, so maybe he is more tied to them. Maybe another guy isn't. Like, Max Scherzer got the most money, came here. Justin Verlander got the most money, came here. I'm not worried about, it's the crappy Mets and they're going to have to triple times pay. I don't think that's going to be the case moving forward. Me personally, with certain players, with Yamamoto or Otani, they didn't want New York.
Yeah, I think that, look, I remember the Nationals did this years ago when they signed Jason Worth. I know it's not like the perfect example, but they overpaid him greatly. And most of us were like, man, why are they overpaying Jason Worth? And it was because they needed to overpay to get the player to come there. And I think that while we may not be the Washington Nationals and we may not be the worst team in the world, I don't think we're the Dodgers. Unfortunately, I don't even think we're the Yankees. And I know they haven't won anything in a long time, but we're not. And so I think it's going to cost more to just outbid. But we'll see. That's for next offseason. I have hope for this season. Now, let me get some over-unders, and we'll see where we stand on this. I'll start off with Jeff McNeil, who I get the impression you don't like. I get the impression a lot of Met fans don't like Jeff McNeil. What's that about, by the way?
I'm surprised that a lot of Met fans don't like Jeff McNeil. I can't speak for them, but I can tell you why I don't love him, although I like him a lot more with J.D. Martinez in the lineup. Jeff McNeil is a fine player. If he's not hitting 300-plus, to me, he's worthless. Now, I know he could play second and third, and he's a little bit of a dirt dog. He can play the outfield. That's fine, but then he should be that top bench player, not one of your best players. He's inconsistent. The roller coaster, 260, 320, 270, 300. I need it consistent. I'd rather have 300 across the board. So the roller coaster ride, I don't want to say bad attitude, but the squirrel, the raccoon thing, that bothered me. I think he thinks he's better than he is. The frustration every time he doesn't get a base hit, I feel like he's more worried about his average than he is about team success. Those are the reasons why I don't love Jeff McNeil.
Yeah, I think that he's very versatile, which matters, because especially with young guys coming up, like, he could end up being the third baseman this year. Like, that's on the table, especially if Brett Beatty struggles, Luis Angel Acuña does well at second base, Jet Williams does well at second base. Mm-hmm. He could end up at third base. He could end up in the outfield. Like, he could very well end up in the outfield again for that same reason I just gave of a middle infielder coming up. And I think he's really good defensively wherever they stick him. The inconsistency is frustrating because I think back to 2021 and the first half of last year, because in those two instances, he sucked. I mean, he was a tough watch. But outside of that, because I even thought in the second half of last year, I know the Mets were out of it, so it's tough to even care, but he hit. And throughout the rest of his career, like the year before that, when he won a batting title, he hits. And he's a valuable guy because you can hit him anywhere in the order. I never thought he was hitting cleanup, by the way. Like, when Mendoza was hitting him cleanup, I thought that was just to get him at bats because he got off to a slow start in spring training. I always thought, like, Alvarez would be hitting behind Alonso. Now, obviously, that doesn't matter because JD is here, though we will get 2 weeks to see before JD arrives. But you're not the only one. Like, I've heard from a lot of Met fans are like, I'm done with this guy. Get rid of this guy. And I think it's the inconsistency would be my guess. But I think that value he brings of being able to play everywhere, especially with these young kids coming up, it matters. He could end up at four different positions this year.
Okay, but that's great. Let's just say he could play left field, right field, second base, third base. That's fine. If he's hitting 265, what good is he? Like, I don't care how many
he's got to hit. I agree. He's got to hit.
Well, he doesn't just have to hit. Because he can't hit with power, which is fine, he better hit at least 300, if not more, and drive in runs, be clutch in spots. And I want him down in the order, 6 or 7. That, to me, is a recipe for success. So the fact that they value, I think he overvalues himself. They overvalued him a little bit. Now he gets minimized with J.D. Martinez, so I should be okay with it. But he's not, like, he's not a 300. He's not a consistent 300, 310 hitter.
Wow. That's my question. Over under 300. What is he at this season? His career average is 298. So he's right at that number, but he's been extreme. He's had four seasons hitting above 300 and by a lot too, 328, 326, 311. But then the 2 years under 300 were 250 and 270. Over under of 300. You take the over?
No, I'm going to say under. I'll say under, but I think over 290.
Okay.
So I think he'll bounce back, but I don't think he's the hitter that he was when he won the batting title. I really don't believe that is the real Jeff McNeil.
Pete Alonso, over under 41.5 home runs.
Over. I think he's going to have a monster year.
How monster? You think he chases 60, or are we talking just the 50s?
Over 50.
Over Phil. Oh,
now, where are you getting
watch.
These numbers from? You have these numbers from somewhere, or you're making them up?
These are official over-under numbers. I swear to God, this is not even made up. I was going through, I think FanDuel had a few of them, but I went to other gambling websites, not to actually bet on this crap, but to kind of get an idea of what the expectations are for individuals. So these are legitimate, like, over-under numbers that I'm sure you could bet somewhere if you had an interest in doing so.
Yeah, okay.
You don't trust my numbers? Is that what you're saying?
No, I want to get them. I've been looking for them so I could do something on our show, on the midday show with it, and I can't fucking find them anywhere.
Yeah,
I see some here or there. There's parlays that you could do. I want just actual, like, numbers on Judge, Soto, Alonso, Lindor. Like, I want numbers.
Yeah, it's. I had to piece it together, put it that way. Yeah. Put it this way. My family's out of town. I got a lot of time on my hands. I'm able to find a lot of crap.
God.
All right, J.D. Martinez. I got an over-under on J.D. Martinez home runs. You ready for this one? 23.5.
Ooh, man. I got to tell you this. I'm rooting like hell for that to go over, and I think that number is low. My gut told me J.D. Martinez was going to fall off the cliff this year. I got to go under that. I'm sorry.
Do you think he is going to fall off the cliff? Because it's a fair worry at 36 years old. Like, you never know.
Here's my issue. Now, I'm not knocking the move whatsoever. I'm excited about it. It was the right move. Here's a guy that Met fans wanted for so long. He's coming off a monster year last year. They finally get him. He's obviously older. As you said, you get to this point in your career, the cliff is right there. It would be typical that it happens with the Mets. And by the way, he wasn't that good a couple of years ago with Boston, too. So okay. He started to show some signs of that.
So that, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I brought this up on the Rico right after he signed. Let's look at that bad year that he had. And it was not a great year, because when the trade deadline rolled around and we were talking about all these different options, it was a fair debate. Do you want J.D. Martinez? Do you not? I wanted him because my thought was, you know what? The Red Sox suck. Get him to New York. Get him in a pennant race. Get him in this lineup. He'll have a renaissance. But here are his numbers. And I bring them up because I ask you, would you take these numbers this year? This is a down year from J.D. Martinez in 2022. These are the numbers. This is the DH spot. Would you say, yes, I'll take those numbers? 139 games, which right away I would take because he's already going to miss the first, 12.
Right.
274 batting average.
Yes.
341 on base. 790 OPS, which is below his career numbers and significantly below what he did last year. 16 home runs, 62 RBIs. Same average as last year, a higher on base than last year, but a major drop in power because he had 33 last year, 16 in 2022.
Can't take that. That you can't take that.
You'd be disappointed.
Yeah, come on. Those are Vogelback rough numbers.
Well, hold on. No, yes and no. I'd be disappointed. That is better than Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelback.
16 homers. And by the way, would you have traded from? Did you see that the Mets turned down? What was the trade that they turned down?
The trade was Alex Ramirez, who's one of their top outfield prospects.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember who the other. That was the key piece. There was somebody else.
Right. The other guy was insignificant that we. Oh, Dom Smith. It was Dom Smith.
Oh, yeah. Forget about Dom Smith.
Right.
Would I have made that trade then?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I would have. I'm not going to lie to you. Now, Alex Ramirez is a top prospect. We'll see what he turns into. But in that moment, as the Mets are on their way to 100 wins and they clearly need a DH, and I was very high on, hey, get JD to the Mets, he'll get going. Would I make it now? Now I wouldn't have. But then, yes, I would have made that trade.
No, I know. I mean, I give Epler credit for being disciplined at the time to not do that. But it cost them in 2022. And now, though, you know.
I want to say this about Billy Epler. I think Billy Epler was a figurehead. And what I mean by that is I think David Stearns is running the show now. You know, if David Stearns wants to keep Pete Alonso, he's going to keep Pete Alonso. If he says to Steve Cohen, doesn't fit what we want, I think he's gone. And rightfully so, right? David Stearns is making a ton of money. I think he's the highest paid executive now in baseball. He is clearly running the show. I get the impression that Steve Cohen was the de facto GM. And here's my evidence to say that. Carlos Correa. He called up Boris while he was sipping a martini. And I can imagine Billy Epler was like, what? Like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
And then I think Steve Cohen probably told him, you're not trading any prospects. A year earlier, we traded Pete Crow Armstrong for Javi Baez and Trevor Williams, and we ain't doing that again. And so I got the impression, I'm saying this now, a year after the fact, not at the time, that Steve Cohen was basically saying, look, you are our bridge to David Stearns. So you are not going to do things I'm not comfortable with. And so when you look at trying to sign Correa on his own, basically saying we're not trading any prospects, including that deal you just brought up, I kind of get the sense that Steve Cohen was telling him, do this, don't do that.
Maybe. I'm not buying it. I think that was Epler saying, what do you think Steve Cohen knows about Ramirez? I mean, come on.
No, I think he knows don't trade prospects. I don't think he knows about Alex Ramirez, but that Pete Crowe Armstrong thing was a disaster a year earlier.
Well, then guess what? If that is the case, and I don't believe it to be the case, then Steve Cohen should be taking some hits for that deadline, not Billy Epler, because that's what Met fans, that's where Epler drew the ire of Met fans for that deadline where they needed a bat desperately and they ended up with Daniel Vogelbach and Darren Ruff.
Yeah, and you know what I think that was related to? I think that was related to they didn't want to trade prospects. They were scared off by the
Hobby Bias thing, like you said, stupid.
100%. And that's why, like, even this season, if the Mets are good and they're in a pennant race, they're not trading top prospects to go for it. They'll try to make judicious kind of like, hey, let's add this guy. This guy can help. They're not trading Jet Williams at the deadline to go get, you know, a pitcher. That's, like, not going to happen. Because
by the way, nor should they.
No, I agree with you, by the way. It's why I never wanted them in on Juan Soto when he was available. It's not a knock on Juan Soto. It was like, we're going to trade prospects in a year that's clearly a transition year. It never really made a lot of sense.
No, not where they're at.
I'm going to take the I think JD is going to be right at that number. I'm going to take the over. I'll give you some optimism, and I'll take the over on Pete as well.
What'd you do for McNeil?
I'm going to take the over on that too. I'm optimistic about the team. So far, I'm giving you three optimistic views. Over on McNeil hitting 300. Over on the home runs with Pete. I agree with you. He'll have a big year. I think JD's right at 24 home runs, so I think it's an over, but it's basically right there. Francisco Alvarez. This was a very low over-under number on Alvarez home runs. I was surprised by this. I think it's a no-brainer. You're going to say over. I'm going to definitely say over. 23.5 for Francisco Alvarez on home runs.
Yeah, it's not as low as I thought when you were saying no brainer, but I'm going over that. I think Alvarez is going to have a year where he's going to be an all-star, and I think he's going to be one of the best catchers in baseball. I love him. I love his attitude more than anything. He's a beast. He's hungry. He wants it. He's confident. I would be surprised if he doesn't hit at least 28, 29. You're talking 30 homers for Alvarez.
Yeah, the reason I thought it was so low is because last year he had 25. He had 25 in 123 games as a rookie, so I figured his number would be a little bit higher than that. Now, obviously, he needs more consistency this year. He was all over the place, man. He'd have a terrible month. He'd have an amazing month, a terrible month. But like you said, his defense is so good that, you know, you can almost live with that a little bit because of how good he is behind the plate. But I'm with you. I'm going to take the over on that one. I think why I was confident back in February before they made the JD move was centered around him, that I think he's taking that big step in year two, and maybe he's the bat that gives Pete Alonso the protection he didn't have. Now, obviously JD is here, so he's the protection, but I think Alvarez has a chance to be that star, that superstar, that man we deserve as freaking Met fans.
He's the face of the franchise moving forward. He is going to be the guy on this team moving forward. Even with Pete signing, Alvarez is going to be the guy.
I think he's got a great chance to be the guy. That's why I'd lock him up right now. 12 years, $98 million. Get it done. Who will be the Mets starter? This is what I made up because there's no over-under. Who's going to be the starting pitcher who throws the most innings for the New York Mets this season?
Boy, that's a great question.
That's a tough one, right?
Yeah. I mean, probably the easy way out is Quintana.
He's the easy answer because he's really got that track record of doing it despite missing the first half of last year.
I'm going to say Hauser. I think Hauser throws the most innings for the Mets.
Adrian Hauser. How about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a guy who I think he's here to be an innings eater. He's going to be a durable guy. Like, I could see Quintana maybe missing some time. Severino, same thing. I don't trust him or Manaea. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go Adrian Hauser.
Yeah, the outside guy is Luis Severino. Luis Severino, since I think last year, I've been eyeing as a breakout candidate. I eyed him when he was on the Yankees. I drafted him very high in fantasy last year. That one backfired because he was a disaster. But even after that year that he had, when he got to free agency, he fit that category of get him on a one-year deal. Maybe he gives you that career season again for the first time in 5 years. See, the guy's got the stuff. The guy is so, like, you can see it. You can see signs of what he was 5.5, 6 years ago. And I think he needed a change of scenery. And I almost think it's good that the change of scenery was here, as odd as that is, because he seemed like a guy that was just so pissed at the Yankees by the end of things. With the IL stint, I remember there was an incident where Cashman put him on the 60-day IL, and he was like, dude, I'm ready to come back. What are we doing? Like, I think he was mad at the Yankees, loved New York, proved he can pitch here. with him, it's all about health. And I'm kind of banking that he's going to be the guy. I think Luis Severino is going to stun us and end up being our best pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, they probably need that to happen. I just don't trust him to either A, stay healthy, or B, perform at the level that he has in the past or even in the spring this year.
Francisco Lindor, over under 27.5 home runs.
Yeah, that's a high number for him. I love Lindor. I think he's going to be an all-star this year. I don't know about that. I'm going to go under that.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under as well. Not a knock on Lindor, but I could see the power numbers going down just a little bit, maybe sitting around 25 home runs, 26 home runs.
Yeah, look, he'll hit between 25 and 30, but I'd probably take under in that spot.
This is a tough one, and I go back and forth about it because, like, what do we really know, honestly? This is more just trusting, I guess, what we've read about guys. Who's going to be the first of the big prospects to be called up this year and play for this team? And of the big prospects, I'm really talking Luis Angel Acuña, Drew Gilbert, and then my guy, Jet Williams.
No pitchers. You're talking just players.
Yeah, I mean, we could include a Christian Scott, Mike Vallie. I would include those position players specifically. Those are the ones that are most highly regarded, especially when you look at, like, Baseball America's top 100 prospects. So I'll include those three guys.
I would rule out Acuña. I would probably say Jet Williams. Although the you know, there's a lot that goes into this. Just because Jet Williams may be the best and the most ready, you know, maybe they want to unveil him at a certain time or make sure it's a perfect spot where Gilbert they could bring up, send back down again. I don't know. I'll go Jet Williams just for the argument's sake, but really who the hell knows?
I want it to be Jet Williams. I think it's going to be Drew Gilbert only because I think it's easier for Drew Gilbert to just get the call up being an outfielder. You know, Jet Williams is learning to play the outfield. He's going to learn to play second base. Same thing with Acuña at second base. They're both natural shortstops. Obviously, that's not happening up here. So I think with Gilbert, it's just easy. And like Harrison Bader, there is no chance in hell he's getting through the entire season as the everyday center fielder. Like, that's just, it's just not happening.
Good point. It never happens.
He's not going to stay healthy. And by the way, he's also not good enough. He's a fourth outfielder. Like, that's all he is.
I don't know if you have this one on your list, but I'm going to ask it to you, throw you a little curveball here. Will Mark Vientos take an at-bat in the big leagues with the Mets this year?
I didn't have that question, but I was going to ask you something that would have been the answer to that. Yes, I think he will. I do not love that he was sent down, by the way. I know you don't love Vientos as a player, and that's fine. Like, what has he shown us to make us think he's a player?
Right.
I'm not arguing that, but I thought these 2 weeks would have been great for him to show, hey, Mark, that job was taken from you, right? Now go prove that we're idiots. Now go out there, smash it for 2 weeks, and prove that we're morons. That would have shown me something. The fact they sent him down, I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed about it. I thought he needed those 2 weeks to be up here in DH. But to answer your question, I think it will come up. I think there will be an injury or maybe Beatty will struggle. Something will happen where Vientos is at the major league level getting at-bats.
Yeah, I'm going to say he's done. If you can't make the team now, how the hell is he going to make the team even with some injuries? He can't play third base. He can't play first base. He's got no position. He doesn't do anything other than hit some home runs, and that with the 200 average, and we don't even know to what extent he could hit the home runs. I think they made their clear decision on Mark Vientos, and I think his days as a Met or in the Mets organization are probably numbered. I would be surprised if we saw Vientos at the big leagues this year.
By the way, here's why I would have had him up here for 2 weeks and beyond. You know, forget about DHing until JD's here. Okay, so JD's here. I'd still have him on the roster for this reason. Number one, Brett Beatty. Should Brett Beatty be facing left-handed pitching? Like, is Brett Beatty good enough where you'd be sending him up there against left-handed pitching at this point?
Let's find out if he could hack it in the majors.
Let's find out if Mark Vientos can hack it in the majors.
Nah, we know he can't. At least Beatty has the potential to play. Now, I don't think he's very good, but at least he has the potential. He was a top prospect. He can be a guy that could be an everyday third baseman at best. Vientos can never be that.
I get that, but I don't know if I just want to send Beatty up against tough lefties. I don't want Max Fried facing Brett Beatty. I'd rather Mark Vientos get a few at-bats.
You want two roster spots of guys who both aren't very good. You want them to take up two roster spots instead of having a guy like Zach Short who could help you win a ball game in different ways.
How is Zach Short helping them? Like, how are they going to use him as a defensive replacement?
How are they going to use him? Yeah, whatever. Defensively, base runner, pinch runner.
Like, they got that with Joey Wendell. Joey Wendell could play all over the infield. So you've already got a guy who can play the infield in Joey Wendell. And then how about late in the game when Harrison Bader and his 210 average is up with guys on base? Maybe Mark Vientos is a good pinch hit opportunity for a Harrison Bader late. I know you hate Vientos.
I don't hate anybody. He stinks.
Well, as a player, I don't mean as a person.
I know, but I don't like. He's not good. What you're doing is holding out hope that he might be something. But even before we get to the hope part, you can rule out he's a young kid that doesn't have a position. Doesn't run well right out of the gate. The only thing he could do is maybe pinch hit, maybe DH. And even that, he hasn't proven to be good enough to me.
Look, the Mets agree with you, obviously, because Zach Short's on this major league roster. And, you know, when David Stearns was asked, he's like defensive, his versatility. They think they found something in him offensively that maybe there was an adjustment made in spring training. Look, I hope Zach Short's amazing. Guy's a diehard Jet fan. I mean, we could use Zach Short existing in this world. Yeah. I got nothing against them. I just wanted this one last chance to see Vientos. Now, let me ask you this question because I already know that Vientos is not the answer. I was going to give you four options.
Okay.
Who ends up playing the most games at third base for the New York Mets in 2024? Mark Vientos. Okay, we can rule that out. Brett Beatty, Joey Wendell, or Zach Short? It's not as easy as people think, because I know Beatty's going to start there, but I don't think they're giving him the entire season to prove he's a major leaguer. He's hitting 180 in the middle of May. I mean, they're going to try to win at some point.
Here's what my hope is. My hope is that because of the lineup now with J.D. Martinez, that their pressure – remember, Beatty came up last year. The pressure was Beatty, Alvarez, Vientos, these guys need to produce. That's not how you want to do it. The way you want to do it is the way they're doing it now. With a loaded top of the lineup to where Beatty is somewhat insignificant down at the bottom of the order, trying to work his way in. So as much as I don't believe Beatty's going to be what they thought he was going to be, I still think he's got a shot to stick as a major league third baseman, especially with the setup now. So I'm going to go with Beatty. That's the hope. I'm going to go with Brett Beatty, that he takes the reins of being the everyday third baseman, or at least shows signs that he could do that.
Yeah, I hope it's Brett Beatty. There's a part of me that thinks Joey Wendell ends up pretty much playing most of the time. Because, and this is going to be a tough one for us to answer as Met fans and for the Mets to answer. If Brett Beatty doesn't hit, how long of a leash do you give him? Like, does he get he's not getting the entire season. That's just not the way it works.
No, but it also depends on the team's success. Like, if they're not going anywhere, if they're under 500, you know, mid-May, you might as well just keep rolling out Beatty. But I think he's got to get at least the first couple of months is the majority of playing time at third. And then at that point, if he can't hit in the first 2 months, then maybe you move on to more of Wendell.
And one of the outside options I didn't include is Jeff McNeil. Like, there is definitely a scenario where McNeil ends up playing a lot of third base because one of the other young kids we talked about, Acuna or Jet Williams, end up coming up. All right, the big one, the team. Their over-under is at 81.5. I think in this modern age of baseball, 85 wins is that number. You get to 85 wins, I think you're a playoff team. Now, there are going to be some years where that number is going to be higher. I think there's going to be some years where it's lower. I think we are destined to have a year in which an 80-win team makes the playoffs. I think it's going to happen. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but right now, JD is here. We know the questions in the rotation. We know all the questions this team has. Are they over 81.5, and what's their win total?
I'm going to say, this is so hard, man, because I'm fighting with the fan in me. And I'm just telling you honestly how I feel here. I don't believe in the pitching, but it's opening day, and I want to be excited about the team. And I like the lineup a lot better with J.D. Martinez in it. I love the bullpen. I do have an issue with the core of the team, so there's still issues there. But I do believe they're going to be right around it. I'm going to go over that. I'm going to say the New York Mets this year will go over that number. They'll finish over 500, and they will win. What's the number you said? 81?
81.5 is the over-under, yeah.
I'm going to say they win 84 games.
All right. Now, you said something a few weeks ago, and I hope I heard it wrong. If I heard it wrong, I apologize. Les, as a listener to WFAN, as a host on WFAN, I can't tell you how many times people claim I said stuff that I never said. So I want to give you a fair shot that maybe I heard this wrong. And that was, if the Mets made the playoffs, right? They made the playoffs, something we never effing see from this team. They have made the playoffs six freaking times in my lifetime, You're a little bit older. You remember 88. You remember 86. So it's two more for you, but it ain't that much more. That if the Mets made the playoffs and they got knocked out in the divisional series or the wild card series or even the LCS, that this season, it sucks. Who cares? Is that really how you feel?
To a certain extent, yes. Let me just explain it.
Go ahead.
Because when you agree to that, you are already accepting failure. And I don't mean that every year, if you win the World Series or if you don't win the World Series, it's a failure, right? Every year is a failure unless you win the World Series. It doesn't work like that. However, the expectations this year have been lowered so much so that if they just make the playoffs in a time where almost every team makes the playoffs, like, you should be ashamed of yourself if you don't make the playoffs. Making the playoffs isn't the same accomplishment as it used to be, especially with a team with the payroll of the Mets and the Yankees. So when you factor in the expanded postseason, when you factor in the expectations that they had the last two seasons, I feel like you're accepting less than if you just say, well, if we make the playoffs, it'd be a good year. Yeah, according to what they're doing, dialing it back this year, then yeah, I get it. You'd exceed expectations. Could you be a playoff team? For me, making the playoffs is being a real playoff team with a real threat to do something. And I know that even if the Mets make the postseason, everything goes well, there's no chance this team can win the World Series. That's why I said that. Now, as a fan, of course, you make the postseason. I get why everybody would say a success. But that was my thinking behind saying, but it's not a real playoffs. It would be a fake playoff.
Well, first of all, I agree with you that the wild card series does not feel like a real playoff. I'm with you on that. Being there in 2022 and even the wild card game in 2016, like, it doesn't feel like the real playoffs. Almost the divisional series is qualifying for the real playoffs. But we learned from Arizona that anybody can go on a run. So if the Mets are fortunate enough to win 84 games, make the playoffs, get out of that kind of fugazi postseason that we both agree doesn't feel real, and they're playing the Braves in the NLDS, of course they could beat them. No one's saying they're better than the Braves, but the Phillies weren't better than the Braves, and they still beat them. The Padres weren't better than the Dodgers a few years ago. They still beat them.
So how about
the Diamondbacks weren't better. So you get in, we could beat anybody because anybody could beat anybody.
All right, but then how about this? We'll meet in the middle. Why not then win around? Win around. Get in and win around. I don't care if you lose obviously I care, but like if you lose the second series, fine.
Well,
get in and win around.
Okay,
then
so
it's a success.
So here's the thing about success to me. 1999, when we lost to Atlanta in game six of the NLCS, I cried like a baby, like a little bitch did I cry. Yeah. And by the way, you can hear about me crying about it like a little baby in My Mets Bible on sale April 2nd, because that game is definitely talked about. But I couldn't appreciate in the moment. Like, in the moment, I was devastated. I was sad. Years later, we talk about it now as rational adults. We would say, boy, 1999 was amazing.
I love that year.
You love that year. Wow. Incredible. So I'm certainly not arguing that in the moment I'm going to come on WFAN after losing in the divisional series to Atlanta and say, gee, that was fun. Yay. We made it. But I think with historical references to look back on, we would say, wow, that was a good year. I think with the limited expectations, we have not fully felt this new era of Met baseball quite yet, where we are in the playoffs every year, because that hasn't happened. I think being in the playoffs and winning a round, like you said, because I'm fair to meet you in the middle, I think while in the moment we would be devastated and pissed and angry about whatever happened that caused us to lose, I think we would look back and say, wow, that was a pretty good year, especially considering the expectations. Because I do think the expectations matter, especially when we're sitting here on the eves of opening day.
100%. It's always, to me, results versus expectations. However, I will not accept just getting in. Get in, win a round, and I'm fine with that if you lose in the second round.
And look, the hope is that we will never have these kinds of conversations again, because the belief when Steve Cohen bought this team was that we would be in the playoffs every year. At minimum, we'd be what the Yankees have been over the last 10 years, which is they haven't won anything, but they've basically been in the playoffs every year up until last year. And that's the hope. And that's the expectation. And that's hope where we get.
What's your number, by the way? You didn't give me a number.
My number is 86 wins. I think they're going to be the third wild card team. I think they're going to win 86 games. I think they're going to make the postseason. I think we'll probably get knocked out in the wild card round. Those things are impossible to predict. But what I know is, get there, you never know. I think the Diamondbacks last year proved that. It's easy to forget.
Who do you have in? Who do you have in the playoffs?
In the National League, I've got Atlanta, Philadelphia, us, the St. Louis Cardinals, the LA Dodgers, and the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
So I have a Mariners Braves World Series. Your thoughts?
I actually have the same thing.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we did our predictions for the SNY website, and I don't even like doing that stuff, but I was like, all right, I got
you
the Mariners?
Really?
Mariners over the Braves in the World Series, yeah.
Wow. I don't know if I should be happy about this. We're thinking the same with these.
I have the Giants in the postseason. Trying to think of what else is outside the box. Cubs in the NL, whatever. I mean, the AL, NL Central. Point is, so you're leaving out the – who'd you say in the West? You're leaving out the Diamondbacks, right?
I'm leaving out Arizona now. Granted, I wrote down these predictions and recorded our prediction podcast before they signed Jordan Montgomery. So
right.
I think that – and I think this about the Orioles too. And I think this about, you know, a lot of teams in the past. It is very difficult to do it again when you're right. A surprise team. And that's why I think the Orioles come back down to earth. They're going to be good for a long time. The Yankee fan will learn to hate the Baltimore Orioles again real soon. But I think even with the Burns acquisition, it's very tough to do it again. So I think the Orioles take a step back. But, yeah, I'm high on the Mariners. I mean, they got a loaded pitching staff. I can see them making a big deal at the deadline. They got J-Rod, who's one of the best young players in baseball. Yep. And you know what? Look, we've seen this over the years. Sometimes it's time. The Texas Rangers finally won a World Series. The Chicago Cubs finally won a World Series. This franchise has never been to a World Series. Think about that. It's freaking insane. Yeah. I think this is finally the year. And they've been good the last 3 years. They haven't been in the playoffs every year, but they've been late 80s or low 90s the last 3 years, year they bust through. I'm with you on that.
Well, they've been hovering. And generally, maybe we just have a same philosophy. Like, at some point, I pick those teams to break through when you least expect it. And right now, it's all chalk with the Astros or the Rangers or the Yankees or the, you know, Blue Jays or whatever. For, you know, maybe the Orioles with a lot of people. And for me, I kind of look at that. Oh, Mariners could get in. They've been hovering there. Maybe this could be the year they break through. Plus, I still believe in the top of the rotation pitching with Castillo and Kirby.
Yeah, I think postseason time, definitely. I think in the regular season, you just got to hit. Like, yeah. I think that's going to be the Yankee formula. I think it's our formula, which is so odd because, you know, as Met fans, we've grown up with all this pitching. And truthfully, their formula to success is going to be scoring runs this year. So we'll see. I appreciate it. WFAN Daily is the podcast. Rico Bronya on my end. Obviously, Sal and BT, 10 a.m. on the fan. Me and Tiki, 2 o'clock. A little joint edition of the Rico and the FAN Daily. Thank you for listening and downloading.
And make sure you email me. Hit us up, WFANDaily@gmail.com. Questions, comments, we'll answer them in an upcoming mailbag episode of WFAN Daily.
And you know that we share a voicemail account? Like Pete Hoffman's voicemail number is the Rico and the WFAN Daily account?
It's his phone. Well, we haven't gotten many so far on the WFAN Daily. I keep pumping the emails. I don't know about the voicemails yet, but his phone goes off and he's like, oh, hold on. I got to get this. And it's a voicemail for the Rico.
It's crazy. Insane. All right. Thank you for listening. Goodbye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.